Plus 49.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Plus 49. We've got a great show lineup for you today. Our guest is Federica Moreno. She's the co-founder of UpHeaven, a startup focused on sustainability and ethical consumer choices. We'll talk about her journey as an expert in Berlin, what inspired her to launch her own business, and how sustainable living fits into everyday life here in Germany. We're also diving into this week's news, from the economic benefits of international students in Germany to Berlin's heated debate over night flights at BER Airport. So sit back and enjoy the show. It's time to dive into this week's news update, starting with some positive insights about international students, followed by an update on Berlin's airport debate, and of course, we'll keep you posted on the latest developments shaping life in Germany. So, let's start. Germany's international students aren't just bringing cultural diversity, they're also an economic win. A new study from the German Economic Institute, commissioned by the DAAD, shows that taxes and contributions paid by those who stay in Germany after graduation quickly outweigh the state benefits they received as students. And many of them do stay. Of those who arrived in 2010 with a student visa, 45% were still living in Germany 10 years later. With Germany facing labor shortages in key industries, international graduates play an increasingly vital role in filling the gap. And speaking of students, Germany saw an increase in new university enrollments last year. Around 4,091 students started their studies in 2024, 2% more than the previous year. But here's the interesting part. International students are driving this growth. Their numbers have risen by about 10%, and now nearly one-third of all first-year students in Germany don't hold a German passport. And now, let's switch gears, literally, to Berlin's airport. Mayor Kai Wegner from the CDU has suggested relaxing BER's night flight ban, which currently prohibits departures and arrivals between midnight and 5:30 a.m. His argument? It's inefficient to reroute flights over minor delays, as happened recently when two Ryanair planes had to land in Hannover instead. But not everyone's on board. Economic Senator Franziska Giffey insists Berliners have the right to undisturbed sleep, and some Brandenburg residents want the ban extended to 10 p.m. That's it for your news roundup for this week. Stay tuned for more. I think by now we've established that Germany is famous for its efficiency. But if there's one exception to this stereotype, it's probably Deutsche Bahn. Delays, technical failures, and last-minute platform changes are a daily adventure. But while the trains might not always run on time, one thing remains consistent: the strict yet unwritten rules of public transport etiquette. So, if you want to blend in and avoid the wrath of grumpy commuters, here's what you need to know. In Germany, Schwarzfahren, or riding without a ticket, is not just frowned upon. It's an expensive gamble. There are no ticket barriers at stations, but don't be fooled. Ticket inspectors appear out of nowhere, sometimes even dressed like regular passengers. And if they catch you without a ticket, you will have to pay a fine of at least 60 euros. Next, when the train doors open, don't just charge in. Always let the passengers exit first. Germans take this rule very seriously, and if you forget, expect some passive-aggressive sighing and sharp looks. The same rules apply to escalators. Stand on the right, walk on the left. Blocking the fast lane is an easy way to annoy busy commuters. You can think of public transport in Germany basically as a library on wheels. Loud conversations, phone calls, or, heaven forbid, playing music without headphones will make you public enemy number one. Many trains even have designated Ruhebereiche, or quiet zones, where the only acceptable sounds are the occasional train announcement and the rustling of newspapers. Families and kids, however, usually have their own designated spaces where a bit of noise is tolerated. Another aspect is personal space. Germans value their personal space, even in a crowded train. If there's an empty row, try to not sit directly next to someone. Give them their own space. And whatever you do, don't put your bag on a free seat during rush hour unless you enjoy death stares from standing passengers. Navigating German public transport isn't rocket science, but knowing these unspoken rules probably will make your journey smoother. So, buy your ticket in advance, sit on the right, and embrace the quiet. And if your train is delayed, well, welcome to Germany. Today, we're with the wonderful Federica, and some of you might already recognize her voice from our Women's Day special because she already spoke for us then. And if you missed that out, you can check it out on our website. But now, first of all, Federica, welcome.
Hi, thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me and excited to be talking with you today.
Thank you for joining us. I think we can start with just you telling us a little bit about yourself, like who are you, where are you from, and how long have you been in Berlin?
Yeah, sure. So, well, I'm Federica. I don't know if that defines myself. It's sometimes very difficult to define myself, like exactly who I am. I'm immigrant and entrepreneur, only a woman. I'm not sure yet. But my story begins in Venezuela. I was born and raised there. And when I was 18, I moved to Madrid for obvious reasons, you know, like Venezuela's situation wasn't the most stable one. And I was obviously looking for new opportunities and a path to personal and professional growth. So I moved there. And after 2 years living in Madrid, I moved to Berlin. And I already have 7 years living here in Berlin, quite a while. And yeah, I have been working here in different roles, different startups. And then I decided to open my own business. And that's what I'm doing here in Berlin. Not sure if that's defining me, but close shot.
Okay, so then tell us a little bit about your startup, UpHaven, right?
Yes, basically UpHaven is a marketplace for independent sustainable brands. We are gathering independent brands that want to do things better and then creating better alternatives in some of the most unequal industries. And the idea came from my personal experience. That's one of the things that Berlin brought to my life. It's sustainability. Like, I think everyone that lives in Berlin, that tends to happen. You start getting much more involved into sustainability. And that was the case with me. And when I started getting into this lifestyle, I realized that it can be quite difficult to really buy from who you want to be buying, because normally in the internet and everywhere, you just find like these huge names, big corporations, big conglomerates that are normally doing like corporate sustainability, but like not really the one that I want to be following, from like small businesses, woman-led businesses, independent ones. So I started researching from them and started gathering all of these, you know, small independent businesses that are doing things differently and really bringing innovation. And I decided to build a place and a platform where I could gather them and like expose them a bit more and give them more visibility.
You said that Berlin kind of gave you more of a feeling for this sustainability. And I also noticed this because I'm from Baden-Württemberg originally, and now I'm living in Bavaria. And it's like small things that I noticed that are different even in regions in Germany, because, for example, in Baden-Württemberg, we had like 4 trash cans. And now in Bavaria, there's only like 2. So
what?
Yeah, it's the small differences. But even in Germany, it's still so different. So, I mean, there are different ways people are sustainable. And how did you notice this from your origins and now in Germany or Berlin?
Yeah, totally. That's true. There are different ways to be sustainable. And I love that you're saying that. And it is true that like a long part of like, how are you sustainable and why are you sustainable comes, where are you from and where are you living? Like that, like that your context influences so much and it has to do so much with your decisions, like at the moment of like purchasing or just like your lifestyle. That's a funny one because I think like it normally happens, right? Like in countries that are, I don't know what's the correct term nowadays to say, but let's say like less developed countries, tend to be more sustainable in certain ways because you have less resources, you have to make more with the resources that you have, you don't consume as much and so on. So there's a part of sustainability when you're living in a country that is not as developed. Again, I'm not sure this is the correct political term to say nowadays. And there's the side of this, but there's also like when there's so much infrastructure, like in Berlin, what you're mentioning with the trash cans, that definitely influence you because it starts appearing in your everyday life constantly and you're reminded of that responsibility and that social responsibility that you have. And that's for sure, like the infrastructural sustainability that you can get in Berlin, it's a big difference with Venezuela. But in Venezuela and in Latin America, and in our country, sometimes you can also find very good ways to be sustainable, even if the infrastructure is not the best as well.
We were just talking about all this sustainability and also this social responsibility. And I wanted to ask you, was it like something you always knew you wanted to do, like do something and be responsible with your consumerism somehow? Or was there like one specific moment that sparked the idea of starting your own startup?
Both ways, actually. Back in Venezuela, I wanted to study political science or sociology. Those were my two careers. And obviously that ties back a little bit with like social responsibility and everything. And that's what I wanted to do. That's what I wanted to be in life. And then when I moved to Europe, I decided that I wanted to study business and marketing because I wanted to have a more prosperous career. And I knew that it was going to be difficult to have a more prosperous economically life with the other career path. So I changed to marketing and to business. And in that time, my actual desire to build a career in something that was related with the social aspect and with the humanities came back and mixed together with like then what I started building as my passion for business and marketing. And that's how UpHaving could come together. But there was one moment that went and something that like really sparked UpHaving idea. And it was that I normally do this New Year's resolution. I'm all about New Year's resolution. So I got a one New Year's resolution that I wanted my whole bathroom to be vegan. That's how it started. I was not a full vegan myself, but I was like, okay, like this is a very simple change that I can do. And I started changing everything in my bathroom, obviously, once everything was running out. And I realized that, you know, like, why am I buying something that is like a vegan shampoo that is still coming in a bottle, plastic bottle shampoo that doesn't make any sense? So it's like I started like asking myself all of those questions because I was already in that path to changing to all vegan formulas. And that kind of like led me to zero waste. And I was like, okay, like if I can do a vegan bathroom, why cannot do a zero waste bathroom? And everything really started in the bathroom. Like I was like, okay, my bathroom is full of shit in another like sense of the word. I need to change this. And then I was like, okay, then my mom, if I can do this in the bathroom, where else can I do it? And then we started changing the kitchen. I, my partner, who is also my co-founder, he follows me and he really like pushed me to do everything that I want to do. And he's like, yes, let's change the whole house. So that's how it started. It was, I think, 2018. And that's the moment where we wanted to change everything. And we were like, now everything new that we want to buy in the house needs to be like plastic free, zero waste, vegan, and so on. And that's when we realized, oh shit, this is difficult. This gets complicated, right? Like, where are we buying from? How do we know if it's actually sustainable? Who is behind this brand? The prices are a little bit more expensive. So how do I know if this is really worth it? And that all of those questions that started coming out landed into UpHaving. We're like, okay, let's answer all of these questions and try to make it easier for other people who are out there wanting to do the same thing with UpHaving. So it was a mixture of like, I always had this need to do something related with humanities and with social movements that over time just led me into a business and marketing path, and boom.
Yeah, I think it all came together in the end. So I think you chose the right path. And I wanted to ask, do you have any tips or like ideas how someone can start being more sustainable? What would be like your tips to start?
This may sound counterintuitive because I actually sell products, but I would say just like by stop buying. That's the way that you can be more sustainable. Like literally use what you already have. And then when you want to buy something new, that's the moment to ask yourself, okay, this money that I'm going to be using, is it only expenditure or can actually be an investment into something that I believe? Can I support my values with this purchase? Can I actually give this money to someone? And so I do the exercise to think like, I have Mr. Bezos in front of me, and then I have a very nice Mr. Good Guy in front of me. And then I ask myself, who would I rather to give my money to? Mr. Bezos or Mr. Good Guy? And then I choose Mr. Good Guy, obviously. But like, really, I think it's just like stopping for a second. It's like, do I really need this? And stop consuming a little bit. That's a very good way to be more sustainable. We don't need that many things. And I like to remind myself that this may sound a little bit hippie, but humans at the end of the day are animals. And that sounds weird, but like in the sense of like, we basically need to eat, to run a little bit, and that's it. We don't need much more than that. So when you remind yourself of those stuff, you start like really realizing that all the rest is just accessories. It's not much needed.
I think this is a perfect moment to take a break, and maybe we can all reflect a little bit on our consumerism and think about all that. We're on our last part on today's interview, and now I want to focus on Berlin a bit more. So I think the most obvious question is, when you came to Berlin or Germany in general, what were your like first culture shocks? But besides, of course, I think the cold winters are like a shock for everyone. But what were your first shocks?
Yeah, no, the cold weather is a physical shock. I think one of the biggest cultural shocks was the direct communication style that you can find here in Germany, which sometimes is very good because it saves you time and it just approaches everything in a way, very direct way. But in Latin America, especially in Venezuela, I to give you a silly example. When we want to ask for a glass of water, we say, "Excuse me, would it be possible if you could please, maybe, if I'm not bothering you, to give me a tiny glass of water, please?" You know, it's such a long sentence and we're like so careful with the other person. Like, could it be possible if maybe I could please have? And here in Germany, you would say, "Water, please." And that for me at the beginning was like a big cultural shock because sometimes I felt that people were mad at me or, you know, that I was annoying people at the same time by being like very decorative in my sentences and especially in business, right? Like sometimes I think when you're saying so many times please and thank you, people can take that as a sign of weaknesses sometimes, like you're too vulnerable and not like a strong leader. And it's just like a cultural difference, right? So that's something that I know I have to adjust. But at the same time, I learned that it can be quite good because sometimes you just need to be direct. And it also allows you to have a space where you can be like, just like straightforward and with what you actually want to communicate. So it's good to have both things in hand and know when to be decorative in your sentences and when to be direct. So that's a good cultural shock that after a while, I got to understand how to use in my favor.
That's also something that this program has helped me with because, as I said, I'm German and I never really thought about as much, but we Germans are actually really, our key word, I would say, is efficiency. We keep everything as short as possible, do it in the shortest time and just see that it's done. Efficiency. And I never thought about it like this, but in all these interviews, it's came up a lot. And now I'm saying, okay, I'm actually like this too. So it's true, yes.
Yeah, when you go to, if you ever visit us in Latin America, you will see that you will have to, you know, wait for very long sentences.
We talked about culture shocks. And besides that, I think there's also some things that everybody thinks they know about a country, like these stereotypes. And now I want to know, did you have any stereotypes of like Berlin, or would you say some of them are true? Like, what would you say is typically Berlin?
Oh, things that are typically Berlin. I was actually, so I'm very workaholic, as you can already tell, and you can know by now. So many of the things that I think when I'm thinking about Berlin is related to work. And one of them is like the work-life balance, right? Like you were saying it yourself before, Germans are efficient. And when you think of that word, you would think that the work-life balance is also very like, you know, everything have to be about your work and being very strict about working hours and so on. And something that I have found that is extremely positive about, I think is the whole Germany, not only Berlin, is how flexible the work-life balance is and how much Germans do appreciate like free time and just like family time or like friends time. And you would think that in a society that is like so much focused in efficiency, that will be hard to find. And it's the contrary, it's very easy to find. And for me, that was a contrast because in many Latin American cultures, there's this strong focus on like, you know, staying longer or doing extra hours without paying. And that doesn't happen here in Germany, and it's very much appreciated. And it just really changes your whole approach to your professional career. And you start seeing just like as a side of your life and not your whole life. So that's something that I appreciate very much about Germany.
I think also a big factor here was Corona, even though it has a lot of negative things. But I think one positive that came from it was that Germans got more relaxed with their office hours. For like, if you have a office job and you have this 9-to-5, but now the people are more relaxed and you can do more of than home office. Before it was more controversial and people thought you would like cheat, but in Corona you only had this option, and now I think they're more open to it, and I think that's also a big plus because you're just more flexible.
You're right. Corona did affect on that. But even before, like when I arrived here, I was shocked. Like for example, the dress code in the offices. Maybe this is more a little bit more Berlin. Let's be honest. Maybe this doesn't happen in Munich or Hamburg. But in Berlin, I was surprised. Like you could go in work like in shorts and crop tops and no one will judge you. It's completely fine to go dressed literally as who you are. And that's very surprising. That wouldn't happen in my country. And here you can go like literally in a bikini to the office sometimes.
One last question I have for you is, what was your feeling of being an entrepreneur in Germany or Berlin like? I mean, we've already talked a little bit about it, but yeah, how was your experience?
It has been a very good experience. Like, I'm super happy to be an entrepreneur here in Germany. Obviously, like, it can be difficult sometimes because as I was saying before, communicate a bit differently than Germans. I look different than Germans. And that sometimes can do create some prejudice towards you. But at the same time, I think that I can also like obviously help you, and all the skill set that you have are well appreciated in the correct circles here in Germany. So it has been overall like a very fun experience. I would say it has been fun.
That's nice to hear, because I think a lot of people picture this like bureaucracy and it's really hard and stuff like that. And of course it is hard. You have to get through all this paper and it's annoying sometimes, but you also have to see the bright side. And I think you described it really nice.
Yeah, no, that the bureaucracy is true. And I have a controversial opinion that like an unpopular opinion. I don't think that the bureaucracy in Germany is so terrible. And I know it is very difficult, especially when you don't speak the language. The language barrier is real, but not for bureaucracy, for anything. And bureaucracy, what I find is like, it's a series of steps. You have to follow them, right? Like, it will be hard, yes. Probably the paperwork will take quite a while. I don't know if it's my own personal trauma coming from Venezuela, where paperwork is also quite difficult. But like here, I just find that the information is there, is available, either like public available information from the government, or there's always thousands of people creating blogs and like giving free advice in the internet. And at the end of the day, it's just a serious step that you have to take, and then that's done. So there are steps, obviously, but I just find that I haven't opened a business yet in the US, so I can't compare, but I can tell that it's not as terrible as people always say. I think that's just a matter of doing it.
I think that's a good note to end this interview. Bureaucracy is not as terrible as it sounds. And now tell us, where can we find you? Where can we support you, if any way?
Yeah, thank you so much for asking that. So you can find us anywhere in the internet. We are called Uphaving. We are quite a new startup. And we're actually going to be launching a campaign very soon where anyone can support us. So if anyone wants to know more about Uphaving or how to support us, you can follow us on Instagram, like UphavingEU. And very soon you will hear more about how to help us make Uphaving possible.
Perfect. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for interviewing me and for giving me this space. I appreciate the invitation. Hi, I'm Federica. I'm from Venezuela. I have a business here in Berlin, and I always wonder how many beers are too many beers.
Now, we all know that beer is essentially a national treasure here, but there's a limit, right? Well, the short answer is, it depends on the situation. Beer is a central part of German culture, but like with anything, moderation is key. Let's start with the most important factor, driving. Germany has strict laws when it comes to drinking and driving. The legal limit for experienced drivers is a blood alcohol level of 0.5 grams per deciliter of blood, which translates to about 0.3 liters of beer. That's just a small beer. So yes, technically you could have a beer and still be within the legal limit, but don't let that fool you. It's better not to drive after drinking at all. Safety should always come first. Now, when it comes to work, the rules are a bit more relaxed. Many workplaces in Germany actually allow drinking during work hours, but it's mostly for special occasions. It's not unusual for teams to celebrate a completed project or a colleague's birthday with a glass of sparkling wine or a couple of beers. But here's the thing, drinking while working is not common. The real fun starts after the workday is over, when colleagues head out to enjoy a drink together and unwind. It's all about balance. And there's nothing wrong with a glass of wine or beer to mark a special occasion. Drinking during the day is also quite common in Germany, actually, and not something that raises eyebrows. You might see people enjoying a beer at lunch or even in a park. It's just part of the daily routine. No one will bat an eye if you're sipping a beer with your Bratwurst at a street food stand. In fact, drinking beer during the day is as normal as having a soft drink in many other cultures. However, it's important to note that Germans are not about excessive drinking, even if it might seem that way at, for example, Oktoberfest, but that's not the norm. Excessive drinking actually has a negative image in the culture. So, the key takeaway? Responsibility is the main rule when it comes to beer in Germany. Enjoy the culture, have a few beers with friends, but don't overdo it. And here's a little German tip. If you leave your beer unfinished, you might just get a few puzzled looks. Finishing your beer is part of the etiquette here, so don't let it go to waste. In the end, how many beers is too many in Germany? I would say a couple is just fine as long as you're responsible. Drink in moderation, respect the culture, and always remember, never leave your beer behind. And that's a wrap on today's episode of Plus 49. A big thank you to Federica Moreno for sharing her journey, insights on sustainability, and the story behind UpHaven. And of course, thanks to all of you for tuning in. Next week, we're going to be back with more news, stories, and events to keep you in the loop. Same time, same place. And until then, take care, stay curious, and goodbye.